The meaning of water. Well, as I indicated in the beginning, water means everything. Water is the foundational element. I know it's not technically an element, but the foundational element of life. When we look in various places in our world for life and new life, we look in water. When we are searching for water on the moon or at Mars, it is that sign that we look for to associate with the possibility of life as we know it. Somehow in Star Trek, it became fashionable to talk about ourselves as carbon-based units, cousins of diamonds, I suppose. We are children of water. We need water to nourish us, to sustain us. We are water. Babies are about 78% water at birth. Adult humans are usually somewhere a little over 60% water, except after our Tuesday potlucks and the Kentucky Fried Chicken, where many of us go up to baby plus 92%. We are mostly water. It is us. It sustains us. It is in our breath. It is the vapor. It is the spirit that we take in. It is in our blood. Our blood has the same salt as the sea. Our tears have the same salt as our blood and the sea. There's one water and one life, and it is all related. We come from the sea. You and I still have our mammalian diving reflex. You know what the mammalian diving reflex is? I can, with a little bit of training, sit still and hold my breath for 3 minutes. If I hold my breath and walk, maybe I can last a minute. If I hold my breath and run, maybe I can last 10 seconds, 15 seconds. At 15 feet under the water, I can swim actively for over a minute. At 25 feet on breath hold, I can swim actively for 2 minutes, and I have to look at my watch to know when to surface. We are water creatures. The pressure of those seas still is in our DNA. We still react to it. It calms us. It bears us. It floats us. And we are cousins to the orcas and to the whales and to the dolphins and to the porpoises. We are children of the ocean. Homer called Okeanos the mother of the gods. It is the mother of us all. One ocean, one river, one snowpack, one lake, one water, one set of tears that connect us all together. The foundational element of our lives. Religion has looked at water since the beginning of religion, and water was seen as an ambivalent, not ambivalent, it's the root, ambivalent, a symbol, something that goes both ways. The writers of the Bible were desert people. The water was something that they needed. If they couldn't find the water, if they couldn't find the next oasis, they had made a wrong turn and a very bad career move, and they were going to die out there. On the other hand, if they got into a wet, into a dry river, and the rain came, they would be swept away by the tidal forces of those rains that are really beyond human imagining. Water was a source of life and a source of death for a desert people. In the Christian Gospels, it's also a source of life and a source of death. Jesus tells his followers, "Ye will be fishers of men," saving them from death, meaning the ocean, meaning the sea. And the sea was a symbol of life and also a symbol of sin. I think I would argue today that our oceans are a repository of much of our industrial sins, as we have dumped into the ocean our affluence is built on the effluence that gets dumped into the sea, and it is a sin and a shame and a pity. water was such a strong image to biblical people of and people of the Quran also. The water was the symbol of life. It gave life. Miracles are constructed around water. In a pre-biblical creation poem, God wrestles the water, the symbol of chaos and death, for 5 days of creation. In the regular Hebrew scriptures, Moses strikes a rock to bring forth water because that was the miracle, that life can be sustained even when there is no apparent source of life, that life can be renewed even in a desert when you are surrounded by sand and rock. Moses parts the sea, proving the power over the symbol of chaos and death. Jesus calms the sea, making exactly the same point, walks on the water, making exactly the same point, and with a little bit of marketing when upsmanship, turns the water into wine. Again, giving a good reason to have wine to celebrate all of our sacraments and holy days. Water is used to nourish us. It's used to clean us. Everyone is familiar with baptism, which is to wash off the stain of original inherited sin. Original sin is not, as some people think, sex. There are no original sexual sins. They've all been done, and in our day, they're on cable. Original sin was disobedience, and maybe dumping our effluent into the water is part of that disobedience in why we no longer live in the Eden that we could live in were we to pay some attention to it. We cleanse with water in baptism. In the Jewish tradition, the mikveh washes away impurities. We cleanse ritually, spiritually, and physically. We understand that water carries off the dirt physically, and we hope symbolically that it also removes those stains of bad habits and of bad feelings and of bad things that we feel that we have done. In Islam also, the water plays a very important role. You go to the hammam at least every week in order to be washed, to sweat, to have the dirt rubbed off of you. And actually the skin comes off. They don't just remove the dirt, they remove the dirty skin. And you get all shiny and new and renewed when you stagger out of a hammam because it is hot and it is an experience. There are also the ablutions that Muslims perform before prayer. And I'm sure that many of you are familiar with all of the issues of separation of school, church, state, and foot washing in our public institutions now about whether or not to build facilities so that Muslims can do their ablutions before prayer. There's an alternative, and I'm not proposing this seriously, but there is a Quranic alternative to washing. Because, again, the early Muslims were a desert people, like the Jews. And a desert people who had to pray 5 times a day were not going to be using their drinking water. Again, it would have been a very bad career move in between oases, stopping 5 times a day and doing minor ablutions and major ablutions, where you wash your feet and you wash your arms like a surgeon down to the elbow. So you can actually wash in clean sand. I'm not proposing that we put sandboxes in the sandboxes of our universities, but it is an option. The issue really is that of cleanliness. The issue really is what a universal sign, symbol, and reality water is in our lives, in our history, and in our mythology. You've all seen pictures of people bathing in the Ganges, of people's ashes being scattered in the Ganges. You all know of people who have had their ashes scattered here in the ocean. There is some primordial sense that we have of this ancient connection to that sea that flows within us, that sea that sustains us, that sea that is necessary for us. Water is the oil of the 21st century. And by that I mean very specifically, we have been using oil in this world for a little bit over 100 years, and it's a fine mess that it's gotten us into, and it is a limited resource. Water, too, is a limited resource. Clean water is a very limited resource. Southern California is not quite ready to go to war with Northern California over Delta water, but we're itching for a fight and we're getting close. And you've got pro-ecology people marching around in Southern California saying, to hell with the Delta smelt. Give us our water because we'd like some golf courses. And we would like to grow flowers and trees and not succulents. These are going to be major life-death, not aesthetic, life-death issues in our developed world in this next century. They are already major life-death issues in the developing world. Lack of clean water and the dehydration that comes from that lack, both the lack of water to drink and the illnesses from drinking bad water, are the number one preventable causes of death in the world. So we'll just take that in for a second. In the world, not cancer, not heart, not even malnutrition and starvation. It is dehydration. Far and away the largest cause of infant mortality, of mortality for children under five, but all the way up through the third world, it is the number one cause of death and the number one cause of preventable death. Water is the oil of the 21st century. How we will find it, how we will share it, how we will use it with some kind of efficiency in our manufacturing processes, in our agriculture, how we will make choices about what is ornamental and what is essential, about how much water it takes to make a glass of water come to this country in a bottle from France. A friend of mine, Dan Wood, who is the Western Bureau Chief of Christian Science Monitor, did an article and a study on this, and it is well over three bottles of water that is used to produce and get one bottle of water over here. This is madness. This is madness. This is a precious, life-giving, life-sustaining element. We are talking here not about comfort and convenience, but life and death. We're talking, when we talk about water and the future, we are talking about a human rights issue. If you think the oil stuff is tough, wait 10 years. Now, there are some signs of hope. In the Middle East, Israel and Jordan have, with a little bit of pushing and shoving, done remarkably well in cooperating with Jordan River water. Isn't that interesting and symbolic? The River Jordan again. Again and again, the same motifs keep appearing in history. There's work done all the time in terms of desalinization. And there are some hard technical choices and social choices that we're going to have to make. And we are going to have to make them. One of the great issues that's going on in the world, and we're getting news of it even as we speak now from probably Saudi Arabia, if I know Mike, is about how we are going to manufacture water out of the ocean and desalinate it, and the choices we're going to have to make about nuclear issues. This is hard stuff, and it will be made by us or it will be made for us. And my suggestion is that we start becoming informed about what the water cost of life is in the world today and what we can do about it. We have to know that this water is that uniting element, that we can, as so many uniting elements, like bread, like flowers, like religion, can be used to unite us or to divide us. There needs to be a worldwide sense of what water means to each and every one of us, and what our responsibilities are in producing and maintaining clean water. Water that is, in the best sense, a source of life and not a source of poison. Water that fills the body and the spirit, that is used and reused and cleaned in a way that makes our lives and the lives of all of our sisters and brothers all over this planet understand that all water is one and all blood is one. And this small, wet, mostly water planet has the ironic challenge of learning, because we have not learned yet, how to make water and maintain water as a source of life, a symbol and a reality of purity, and a true communion where all are invited to the table to partake and to be filled healthfully.